Winter could be tough on your vehicle. Now's the perfect time to get your Chevy ready for that next road trip with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. When it comes to service, no one knows your Chevy better. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment.
All right, thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:10 on 720 WGN, 10 minutes after 12 on this Thursday afternoon. As you know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. Yesterday we had the people in from Chocolate Twist. Kate Coffey was here to talk about Valentine's Day gifts. And, of course, nothing says Valentine's Day like chocolate. And tomorrow we're going to have some florists in. They're busy time because, obviously, flowers and Valentine's Day go hand in hand. And today, well, really today, we're going to round out the trio of the top most attractive Valentine's Day gifts. And we're going to talk about Kraft sausage. That's right, Kraft sausage. Chris Salm and Eric Romberger in the studio. They are the men behind Gilbert's Kraft sausages. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you very much. I have to take exception because I think nothing says Valentine's Day like sausage, personally.
I kind of nothing more romantic.
I oversold the flowers, huh? All right, so I want to talk Valentine's Day in a little bit, but first is I'm interested, you know, we talk so much on this show about craft beers and about how that is just where it's, and it's true, you know, the way we drink beer has fundamentally changed. But you guys are in the market for craft sausages, and I'm not sure I quite get that. It started through the idea of a craft beer, right? Who's going to Eric, talk first.
Yeah, kind of started with we really wanted to start a brewery. We were home brewing together, doing that almost every weekend, and started looking into the whole plan and idea of starting a craft brewery.
Now, you guys are young guys, right? How old are you?
34.
35.
That's good that you had to think about it, because you're getting a little older. But you've been friends for a long, long time?
Yeah.
And
since,
so
we're about 11 or so. Yeah.
And where did the craft brewing come from?
We like beer a lot. You know, I mean, obviously it was something we were really interested in and we wanted to pursue that. And we were looking around the landscape and seeing new breweries popping up every single week and thought, you know, maybe this market's getting a little bit saturated. Why don't we pivot and apply the same principles of craft beer to what we called craft sausage?
Right. So because when you're enjoying the beer, you probably were having a sausage or two.
Exactly. They're very complementary industries. You know, both are kind of dominated by a few big guys at the top. Then we thought we could fill it, you know, a special niche with some higher quality, unique flavors and a little bit more personality.
Well, the name of the company is Gilbert's Kraft Sausages. And I've seen is it the Frohman?
The Frohman,
these big, beautiful hot dogs on my grocery stand. I shop at Heinen, so I've seen them there. And they come in like almost, what is it, a four-pack or a five-pack?
It's a four-pack individually wrapped sausages.
Right. And so where else are you?
Where aren't we? Jewel Mariano's, Caputo's, will be in Costco in the spring and summer. So anywhere around the Chicagoland area, pretty much you can find our products.
I had the guys in from Bona Beef last week, and they were talking about getting into Costco and how they had to do some sort of road shows and things like that. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have the same sort of audition? How did you get into Costco?
Yeah, we've done an awful lot of road shows. That's always part of our program every summer, so you can find us out there sampling every summer.
I want to go back to the crafty idea of it, though, because so beer, you know, there's so many different sorts of beers, and how much sort of leeway do you have when you're creating a sausage to make it a craft sausage, to make it something unique? I mean, you're not going to have like a, you know, a peppermint pork sausage or things like that?
Maybe. Might be good. I don't
know. I really think...
You know, we look at it like sausage is really kind of a culinary blank slate. You know, there's so many things you can do with it. It's just what flavors can you come up with? We like to be inspired by, you know, our experiences and places we visit and, you know, growing things in the garden and just experimenting and having fun. So, you know, like with beer, you have offshoots of the traditional varieties. That's kind of what we do with sausage, but we like to put our own unique spin on it.
So you have a few stages. I mean, stage as in a platform, you know, that people are watching the set things, and then you build off that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we started with the Frohman, which is an uncured beef frank. We started with a classic beer brat, but then we got into more unique things like our kale with shallots and white wine. We did our beef with blue cheese. So there's, you know, really the possibilities are endless. You just, if something tastes great, put it in a sausage. If not, you know, maybe we'll go on to the next recipe.
Are you guys still making it? Do you still make it yourselves?
Yeah, we make the we make the test batches. We come up with the flavor formulations, and then you know, from there we're on a larger scale now where we use other people to manufacture the product for the
absolutely,
grocery store.
Which is only natural.
Yeah,
I just want to see the testing. I'm picturing you guys like with your hands covered in. I don't know. Do we want to see it being made? Right. I tried not to make that joke, but
for us, you do want to see the sausage being made.
Really? Why? Yeah.
It's premium ingredients. There's nothing to hide for us. You know, we're not using anything, you know, out of the ordinary. We're using quality cuts of meat, you know, real cheese, real vegetables. You know, it's nothing you wouldn't want to see.
All right, so you've been friends forever, and now you're, you know, we're craft brewing together, friendly, blah, blah, blah. Now it's real business. Who's harder to work with?
We're at each other's throats constantly.
But really,
has
it been a challenge?
No, not at all.
Never?
I mean, we have our disagreements on certain things, but honestly, like, you know, we spend every single day together. We play basketball together. We hang out on the weekends. Our families are really close. So, you know, there hasn't been any issues.
That's a great story. I'm glad. That's nice to hear. You know, the friends can go on and do that. And I hope it lasts a long time for you.
We did room together in college, and I think we went through the tough times then.
Right, right.
And now we're through that and ready to cooperate.
You re-entered Earth's orbit or atmosphere right. Through there. All right, so it is Valentine's Day, and nothing says Valentine's Day like cooking with sausage, right? So do you have any helpful hints for maybe the girlfriend who wants to please her man?
Yeah, absolutely. We got, you know, on our website, you can find all kinds of recipes. You know, there's more that you can do with sausage than grill it and put it on a bun.
Uh-huh.
GilbertSausages.com. You can find all kinds of recipes. One we really like, easy to make pasta dish with our Caprese chicken sausage. So you can find that one on there.
And that one's basically, it's real simple. Cook up whatever kind of pasta you like, slice up and saute the Caprese chicken sausage. It's got the sun-dried tomatoes, basil, mozzarella cheese in it. But then you can also chop up some fresh basil, do some mozzarella pearls, maybe a little sun-dried tomatoes, olive oil, balsamic glaze. Put it all together in a bowl. It looks like you spent all day on this fancy dish, but it really only takes about 20 minutes.
Where'd you guys go to school together? Where were you at?
University of Illinois.
Right, and did you ever think that these years later you'd be sitting in a radio station giving recipes?
Definitely not.
Chris Salmon, Eric Romberg, they are the founders of Gilbert's Craft Sausages. You probably, well, if you haven't tried them, you've certainly walked by them at the grocery store. Give them a look. They look beautiful. So thanks, guys, for coming in. I love the story, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
Steve.
Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch. I tell you, it all ties together. Earlier in the show, we were talking to the founders of Gilbert Craft Sausages. And now on the program, we are going to go to the home of sausages. Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ryan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
No problem. Are we going to talk cheese and beer next?
I was in Milwaukee last night and had a brat. Right around the corner from the Bradley Center, I went to see the Marquette Golden Eagles beat Providence in double overtime. What a great night. And I think I offered you a ticket. I knew you were going to be up there, and you turned me down. I'm not sure what that's about.
Yeah, I got something else brewing up here right now. Actually, it's not me. It's the Democratic candidate.
Right.
Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders will be here in a little bit for a PBS debate. It's their second debate in 7 days.
Right. And so, you know, when they added this New Hampshire debate last week, Bernie Sanders was holding out for more, and he got a few more. But this one was always on the schedule. This one was going to happen before they added that New Hampshire debate and before they added the ones coming up down the line. But, Ryan, I don't understand, really. We were in Iowa, then New Hampshire. The focus is on South Carolina and Nevada now. Why are they in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't make a lot of sense other than the fact that the Democratic National Committee sees Wisconsin as a purple state that they want to make sure that they can land come November. It's voted since 1988 in favor of Democratic presidential candidates, but we have seen a surge in Republican support in Wisconsin in recent years. Governor Scott Walker winning two elections and a recall election. Also, you've got to keep in mind that House Speaker Paul Ryan just next door here in the district next door. So they're trying to head off any potential surprises and hoping that two Democratic debates in Milwaukee in a span of 3 months will help that.
Not only that, Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, also is from Wisconsin. So
yeah, good point.
Wisconsin's yeah, exactly. got some Republican muscle. All right, well, we talk money here and economic issues and all of that. And, you know, there's certainly going to be strategy involved tonight. But emerging from New Hampshire and elsewhere, when these two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, get together, are very different views. Well, you know, I think by big picture, they're probably not that very different, but the views certainly distinguish themselves when it comes to the future of this country. Bernie Sanders has his eyes on Wall Street, and he says Hillary Clinton does too. what do you expect to come out of tonight?
You know, it is interesting because I rewatched the debate we saw 7 days ago, and you know, obviously, much of what Bernie Sanders' appeal is going after you know, big corporations, and he says the system is rigged, and also politics is rigged to favor you know, corporations, and inferring that Hillary Clinton may have been in the back pocket of Goldman Sachs, and that's when she leveled that comment. Saying that he was artfully smearing her, which
right.
You know, generated all those boos. I expect more of the same from Bernie Sanders. I mean, that's his whole campaign. Now, Hillary Clinton has continued to say that while she appreciates the cause and the effort of Bernie Sanders, it's just not feasible to do the things that he wants to do, whether it be you know, going after the insurance companies or you know, trying to rip all the money out of politics. So I expect to hear more from that. But remember, with that focus being on South Carolina and Nevada, Hillary Clinton has an advantage, and she just picked up a key endorsement today with the Congressional Black Caucus. You know, these are a bunch of little battles, and she's hoping that getting the support of black leaders in Congress will help her cause in South Carolina when that primary comes a few weeks from now.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because when she runs, or if she runs against a Republican eventually, she's going to be the one saying the system is rigged against the little guy, and she's standing up for the young people, the poor people, the working women. But Sanders has managed to co-opt it and sort of take it from her. So even though they might be arguing very much from the same side of the fence, he's the guy with the gate. He's the guy who's controlling that.
You're absolutely right. And it'll be interesting to see what he picks and chooses because, as I mentioned, both of them have their eyes on these next two upcoming states. And, you know, if he stays laser focused on the economy and you know, going after big businesses, he may miss out on some of these other topics. So we'll see if he pivots. You know, he has mentioned a few times, you know, issues outside of economics, you know, specifically on, you know, trying to free up the federal prison system, get many of the, you know, the young African-American men who get busted for minor drugs out of the system and focus on white-collar crime.
All right, start your stopwatch because I predict he says Al Sharpton in the first 7 minutes of tonight's debate. He met with Sharpton yesterday in New York and Harlem, and that's going to, he hopes, maybe be his entree into the African-American vote in South Carolina. All right, listen, you enjoy Milwaukee. Maybe head down to Real Chili for a lunch. That'll sit very well by the time debate time rolls around tonight at 8 o'clock.
Sounds good.
Ryan Burrow from WGN News up in Milwaukee already ahead of the debate coming up tonight. We will talk about your taxes, your tax returns, and the cyber thieves who are after them coming up in a bit. First, the news headlines. That comes after this on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:38 on Thursday afternoon. All right, let's go to California and CNET. Shara Tipkin is on the phone line. Sharon, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I said California. You're in California, aren't you?
Yep, San Francisco.
Well, good morning to you then.
Yeah, I just heard your forecast 22. We're quite a bit warmer here. So.
Listen, this is great talking to you. We'll do it another time.
Great.
No, I want to talk. There are a couple things I want to talk about, but one is the IRS. Well, it's our favorite time of year. People are starting to work on their taxes. I've been doing that. I'm a Quicken boy. You know, I go home, do a little bit here, do a little bit there. But there was a big story last year, a couple of years ago, about how hackers were getting involved. And I think the state of Illinois actually stopped accepting returns for a while until they could figure out how to stop it. Theft, it makes perfect sense. All the data is right there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's back this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was an announcement Tuesday. The IRS said that hackers were able to, they used 450,000 stolen Social Security numbers trying to generate those PINs you have to use when you file your returns. They were able to get into about 100,000. And so they've notified people taking steps. But yeah, I mean, I think we're just going to keep seeing this happen over and over.
You know, it's like a virus, isn't it? I mean, you can take the antibacterial, but they reform. They reconfigure and they figure out a way around it. I don't think they're ever going to go away.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think everybody has dealt with a hack at some point. You know, my Amazon was recently hacked. You know, and it's really like having to do things, you know, for your personal accounts like that, doing things like two-factor authentication where you also have to respond to a text message on your phone or something like that. And, you know, when it comes to your personal tax data, that's something that we don't have a lot of control over how secure it is. So it's something the government's really trying to look at and figure out how they can make these more secure.
Get this, Shara. I got an email last week from someone I know, predominantly professional relationship. I know him personally a little bit. And it just looked a little hinky. They were asking me to sign on to Dropbox to read a document. Well, you know, in our relationship, it's not unusual that maybe that would have happened. And I started to do it. It just seemed a little odd. So I wrote to him and I didn't reply from the email address it came from. I went back into my contacts and saw that the email addresses matched. So from there, I wrote to him and I said, hey, this looks strange. Is this you? And right away, the answer came back, said, yes, it's me. Go ahead and let me know when you open it, what it looks like. And so I tried, and then it just, again, I just got scared off. I had a second email address for him, and I wrote to him the next day, and he said, no, he'd been hacked. So not only was this guy hacked, someone was responding with his email address to encourage his friends to give up their information.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just crazy the lengths that these hackers will go to get your information. And it is. It's scary with how sophisticated they've become with it.
All right, so we follow all the rules. We do what the government says. We file our taxes. We get our PIN. We didn't do anything wrong. We get hacked. What happens? How do we get out of it, or what's our responsibility? What's the next step?
Well, I think in this case, the IRS reached out to people to let them know that they were hacked. And basically, what you can do is set up one of those services that will monitor your accounts to make sure that there isn't anything unusual going on. President Obama also said, I mean, this isn't going to help us like tomorrow if you were hacked, but President Obama proposed to spend $19 billion on more secure technology for the government. So, you know, if that gets approved and if that's something that rolls out, hopefully these sort of issues won't happen as often, or there'll be more things we can do to prevent it.
Or they'll figure out another way around that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that is actually what will happen, but wishful thinking.
Let's talk about Twitter a little bit, because I love Twitter. I like my Twitter. I'm not dissatisfied with it. But they're having trouble. I mean, we keep hearing about executive changes. And then I read that, was it for the last quarter of last year, they had zero growth when it comes to users. So, I mean, have they hit their ceiling?
It's really hard to say. I think the issue with Twitter is it's a really great live news feed. So celebrities, politicians, journalists, we're all on it all the time to see what's going on, to kind of blast out our own stories, to let people know what's happening. But I think there's not a lot of appeal to kind of just a mainstream consumer. People aren't posting, you know, photos of their kids on there like you do on Facebook or, you know, things like that. So, and it's also not the most intuitive service. If you just come into it, it's kind of like, what's even happening? Like, what's going on here? I don't even know how to respond to things. You know, there's special ways that you can respond to a person or reply, and it is. It's kind of complicated, and that's one thing Twitter's trying to change as well, because they realize that they have to make it easier if they want a lot more people to join it.
Right, and so the risk is they make it easier and they allow for some of these created tweets and things to make it more attractive, and then they end up losing those of us who like what we have already.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a delicate balance that they're going to have to take. And the fact is, you know, maybe they're never going to be as big as Facebook. Facebook is about five times the size of Twitter right now. And it's just really kind of figuring out, like, is that okay for Twitter to be this smaller kind of niche social network, or do they need to reach every single person in the world, which is what they had originally set out to do?
Emma, you bring up a good point.
Managing.
You bring up a good point because it is, I mean, I'm a newscaster most of the hours of my day, and, you know, it has changed the way we gather news just because we can go directly to so many different sources and things like that. You know, I also follow a lot of authors in the book industry, so it's great for that sort of rifle targeted shot. I can set up a list of things about books and I get that. But I don't check it to see what my friends are doing or to see what my family is doing. It's just, it's a different sort of tool, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a great news service. You know, I check it all the time, even when you're waiting for news to come out, like Twitter's earnings. You know, if somebody sees it before you, they immediately tweet it and you're like, oh yeah, it's out. I can check for this. And it, you know, it's really great in the purpose that it serves, but it just is kind of hard to see kind of the broader appeal of it to a lot of people.
Right. So, you know, we get a rumor about a celebrity or something like that, and I can search on Twitter and see that, oh yeah, TMZ reported that an hour ago.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of celebrities are using it as ways to release news, or, you know, companies use it as well to say things. You know, T-Mobile's CEO is probably one of the most prolific people on Twitter. You know, he's always posting his opinion, interacting with customers, interacting with journalists on there. And it is just kind of this connection that you normally wouldn't have. And because everything on there is public, you know, it's all in this like public
atmosphere
as opposed to Facebook, which is, you know, kind of more close to your friends and your personal social network.
Hey, gee whiz, Donald Trump likes it a lot.
Yes, he does.
he's become the king of Twitter lately. All right, listen, Shara Tipkin from CNET, thank you very much for kicking these things around with us. I appreciate it. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the new YouTube channel or the new YouTube shows, none of which looks remotely appealing to me.
Well, I don't think you're really the target audience. These are kind of for the, you know, teens and cord cutters who are pretty much already watching.
No, cut straight.
Anyway,
Shara, cut straight to it. What are you saying? You're saying I'm too old for this?
No.
Yes. All right. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on The Business Lunch, Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much to Orion Samuelson, Kim Gordon, and Dolly McCarthy. The producer today, as always, is Yun Tai. And, you know, earlier this morning or this afternoon, we had the guys in from Gilbert's Craft Sausages. And Yun was so interested in the interview that he's already sampled a couple of the sausages. Elise Glink is on the phone line. Elise, welcome to The Business Lunch.
I love sausage. How are you?
Who doesn't? And put the word craft in front of it, it's all good.
And a beer, and who knows what else.
I was talking earlier, I don't know if you heard me, about this idea. You know, you got a product, you got a message you want to get out, and, you know, it used to be when we were a bit more homogenous, or maybe we weren't, but we didn't pay attention to everyone, you would come out with one message, one plan, and hit the people you needed to. Nowadays, you do that, and you might be missing a trick, right?
Well, I've been watching Mad Men. I never got to see it when it first came out.
I haven't watched it either.
I'm a Mad Men junkie on Netflix. This is how my life is going these days. But what's been interesting about watching this is it's exactly what you're saying. It, you know, it's the 1950s, the period of time some people long for, although it's horrifying if you watch the show. But the idea that there are a bunch of white guys in the show sitting around a table, and women are not even included in that conversation, and what they think of as a minority is the Italian guy in the art department. And you contrast that with what you're seeing today with, you know, the multicultural, multiracial, even multigender kind of marketing that's, I think, so far sophisticated, none of these guys in that show would be able to even recognize what's happening today. And that's our reality.
I was reading an article about this, and a guy pointed out a case. He goes, look, he says, if you're marketing a cancer treatment, he said, if you're going to go to an Anglo audience, you're going to marketed as a fight, a singular fight. You know, you are fighting this disease and you are going to beat it. If you go to a Hispanic audience, it's going to be a very different approach. You're going to market it as sort of a community fight and a family fight, just because the same product or the same different audiences react very differently to different messages.
You know, my company, ThinkLink Media, we did a project a number of years ago for a really big bank, and what they asked us to do was look at how the Hispanic community would hear messages about mortgages and refinancing and all the rest. And so we did this study, and they had some research they gave us, and it was so interesting because they had identified six or seven levels of Hispanic communication, from where you're just first coming here from a Spanish-speaking country to you've been here several generations and almost nobody in the household speaks any Spanish anymore, and how the communication between people and then the external forces to, you know, the target, how that communication happened and in what languages. And it was really interesting to see, even, you know, 8-10 years ago, the differentiation even in a group that we lump together today
right.
as Hispanic. And I think that that's true in so many other areas as well. You know, everybody thinks, you know, this group, this like, oh, you're Hispanic and you fall into this one huge pot. And in reality, even though we've got, you know, 31% of the U.S. population is going to be Hispanic by 2060. It's a few years down the line, but it's growing. It's not just one huge pot. And I think that if you're going to be successful with multicultural marketing, you have to be extremely sensitive to racial differentiation, gender, right, male, female, other, age, and all sorts of other sort of subsectors.
You know, a great example of that, I think, is going on right now on the campaign trail, where people are saying Hillary Clinton's a woman running for president. Madeleine Albright says there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. All that was true for Madeleine Albright's generation, but it's not true for the younger women in this country who are, you know, behind Bernie Sanders, much to the consternation of Albright and others.
Yeah, I think that there's been some really ugly language from women toward women about this. And the response that you hear back is, hey, isn't it the ultimate sexist thing to tell me to vote for a woman because she's a woman?
Yeah.
And you're hearing that from the young generation, right? The millennials who are, it's like that old Stephen Colbert joke. I don't see race. You could be black, you could be white, you could be purple. I don't know what color you are. All like, and he says it as a joke, obviously, comedic sense. But this idea that we want to hear about the issues and we don't want to be marketed because we're women that we have to do something. And I do think that nobody in this generation that's coming up now, this millennial generation, but even in Gen X and Gen Y, wants to be told what to do. They want to be engaged to make a difference, and they want the marketers to behave that way.
Okay, we've got 10 seconds, but really quickly, the idea that you can look at this as a burden, but really, it's an opportunity. If you gear your product to different cultures, you might be finding a whole new audience who's not hearing you now.
I think segmentation is one of the most underexploited, and I'll use that word, underexploited pieces of the marketing pie. And people should be thoughtful about it and engage with it, and I think it'll be really successful. And I know we're out of time, but on Monday Morning Marketing with John Byrne, which is on WGN Plus, this is what
that.
We're talking about this week.
There she goes, just like that. You be Marco Rubio, I'll be Chris Christie. There it goes. There it is. I was just going to say that Elise is the co-host, Monday Morning Marketing. You get here to WGN Plus, and you and John do. I love when you guys come in, so I hope to see you again real soon.
We promise. We'll be there.
That's Elise Glink. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.